America is turning 250, and we're going to talk about it. Broadcasting from the Fellow Windows and Doors of Wisconsin podcast studio, this is Reflecting on America 250 on WTMJ. Joining WTMJ Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry are political strategists Joe Zepecki and Bill McCaution.
Welcome to the podcast. We are in the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin podcast studio. Obviously, America's 250 celebration happening as we speak, and we've been winding it up with rates, World Cup action, and just all the celebrations are going to happen around this country this week. We thought, let's get the gang together. And that gang means, of course, my great partner, radio partner, Kristen Bry. Always great to see you. You look fantastic.
I forgot to wear my red, white, and blue today.
Yeah, but the guy that did wear his red, white, and blue sitting to my right, Joe Zepecki, our Democratic strategist friend who joins us on Fridays.
Happy Independence Day, everyone.
Yeah, that's the Avengers, right?
Captain America.
Yeah, and then, of course, Bill McCaution wearing proud Brewers fan.
Go Miz.
Love that. He's our Republican strategist. So I guess we're going to tee it up. We had a lot of back and forth pre-podcast about how we should do this, and we'll get to a lot of angles on this story. But Joe, you sent out a great piece by
Joseph Ellis.
Yeah, tell us what it said.
He's an American historian. Every 4th of July for years, I have tried to reread at least some of Founding Brothers, which is a book he put out 15, 20 years ago now. It's about the revolutionary generation. It's a slightly different historical take on it. And I think it's really important around the 4th to think about the founding, not just the words in the Declaration of Independence, but what do they mean? And what is it about this country that is so special? So I want to just tee us up with a couple of direct quotes from the preface of this book that he wrote. The key point is that the debate among the founding generation was not so much resolved as built into the fabric of our national identity. And the idea here is, you know, as he writes later on, Lincoln once said that America was founded on a proposition that Jefferson wrote in 1776. Joseph Ellis's contention is we are really founded on an argument about what that proposition means. And that notion that debate and disagreement and competing schools of thought around the founding of this country is who we are as Americans, I think about a lot in the context of the show that we get to do every Friday. And the fact that Bill and I can disagree agreeably and have different worldviews, but we both consider ourselves patriots who love this country. And there is something special about that. And as so much of the partisan shouting seems like so uncouth, some of it might be, right? But also some of it is like a really essential part of being an American.
I would argue it's built into the recipe of the country, right? That's why we have freedom of speech, so that we can disagree. Where I fall apart on that is, and you can speak to this, Bill, it's just the sort of the violent rhetoric that seems to have replaced civil, honest debate. I think it diffuses the arguments that we should have about policy and presidents and the things we do in this country. Where do you see this falling?
I think the premise is spot on, that we were built to debate. I think what the premise failed to consider 250 years later was social media and cable TV and the ability to have 24-hour news cycles where people can turn debates into, reality TV shows on any given day or any given hour. And I think that's hurt democracy in a lot of different ways. But I think the principle or the premise of, you know, we were built on determining what a better future looked like for our people 250 years ago, I think that was a success. I do. And I hope that continues for the next 250 years and we go back to getting good at working through issues like you and I do on Fridays and the four of us. And even when we don't get to the same conclusion, you know, we at least agree that there is a point that you're making. There's a point that I'm making.
But historically, when do you think that when did we do this the best as far as if the fabric is disagreeing, but disagreeing well and debating to get to consensus? When did we do that well as a society? And when did it start to shift? Because In the very small example of being inside the primary for Wisconsin governor through Democrats. And I was just telling Steve, it was as dramatic in 2022 as the infighting and the conversations that were happening for governor's race when there was a primary on that side. And now we're doing it on the Democratic side. And the amount that it's technically on the same side and like discourse gets shut down, usually in comment sections or whatever. It's like, but if you don't agree with me 100%, I have no use for you. So like, when did that start to shift as far as people being bad at the debate, at the conversation?
Well, I think all of our brains have been a little bit pickled by what Bill talked about. And I would shorthand as the information environment in which we live. Right. And so there has always been rhetoric, right? I mean, Ellis also talks about how like the founding generation, like that decade between 1774 and 1784 was really a decade long shouting match. Right. And then you had even in that founding generation, the duel that took the life, right? Like Aaron Burr and Hamilton are dueling at Weehawken. We have had spasms of political violence in this country, but the only macro violence was the Civil War. Right. And so despite these like spasms of that and of heated rhetoric throughout our nation's history, we still found a way to mostly get it right over time. And to the point about like the 100% thing, they didn't require 100% vote of all the states to declare independence.
Hmm.
Let's talk about the journey. It's 250 years. And I as an exercise, I chat GPT'd, give me a 50-year breakdown. And we talked about, it talks about Reconstruction and distrust in government and obviously reconnecting citizens to their government. Where do you think we're at? I'll start with Bill. Where are we at after 250 years in this country? Are we in a good place, better place, work in progress? Where are we at?
It's a work in progress. I think we're generally in a good place, but it's a work in progress and more needs to be done. And that requires strong leaders that can bring people together and try and solve big issues, education being one. Infrastructure could be another. It is... Foreign policy is something we often disagree about, but it's there has to be an ability to disagree and move forward at the same time. And I think that's what's lacking right now is just an unwillingness to consider somebody else's opinion and whether or not there is some common ground there that could actually advance the ball. And that's a problem.
Real quick, do we have the leaders in place, both those serving and those trying to be our leaders, to accomplish that in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years?
Not in the next 5 years. In the next 20 or 30, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what I would say. To me, the missing ingredient, when you think back about General and then President George Washington, the thing I'm always struck by is the humility of his leadership.
Yeah.
He was not sure that he was up for command of the Continental Army. He had the humility to know he was going to make mistakes. He had the humility to know that he served the civilians who made up the Continental Congress when he was commander in chief. And then he had the foresight and the humility to walk away after two terms as president. And that type of humility, people say, what's the most important moment of the founding generation? My hot take is, it's John Adams. It's our second president who, after losing re-election, decided to just walk away.
Yeah.
Right? And that, it wasn't Washington to Adams, because Washington basically abdicated or just said, that's it, I'm done. It took Adams losing an election and then accepting that and moving it along that actually laid the ground for what we now call the peaceful transition of power. And to the question about, what's missing or what do we need? This idea of certainty, no way. We don't know how this stuff is going to shake out. I have strongly held beliefs. Bill has strongly held beliefs about policies and things. We're actually not certain that any of them will work out the way that we intended.
Right.
And the degree to which that humility is lacking in our politics, boy, we could use a dose of George Washington.
Kristen, you're the woman in the room. Speak to that, because that's the big thing here, right? You're the one of in here.
I'm the most humble in the group. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Not based on the conversation we had pre-show.
Yeah, I know, right? But it took a long way to get there, but that's a side note. But I think one, it's hilarious just the amount of Hamilton musical songs that are going through my head at this moment as the Broadway nerd in the group. But our politics aren't set up for the people who have humility, right? I think about this all the time as far as what it means to be good at campaigning versus good at governing. And they are a very different skill set a lot of the time as far as being charismatic, being able to go out there and sell a promise of what you your vision is and get people on board. And you get these, like, I get very uncomfortable, like, having to get to go on to the RNC and the DNC of this, like, cheerleading and fangirling or fanboying over politicians who work for you,
yeah.
Right? And so it's like there's this, like, celebrity status thing that we now do with politicians and what it takes for them to get elected and be on TV and have the moments that are like, that is not the skill set to be a humble, having humility and in choices to govern. And so it's like, even the way and our system that we've created in order to elect officials does not filter out for those qualities, really, I don't think.
Let me ask you a more specific question.
Okay.
And because you're the only woman in the room, I think it matters. You can make the argument that women are significantly better than they were 250 years ago, but are they better than they were 20 years ago in terms of the rights they have, the way they're treated, the things that are they're dealing with?
I mean, the big obvious one is rights over our own body, right? That is depending on where you live right now, that is a big issue and an important issue that certainly my daughter is in a different position than even my, well, not when my mom was young, but like it's, that is fluid as far as where we're going. Equal access to education, equal access to jobs. Like there's a lot of data that shows that there's more women than men going to college. There's a lot of like overrepresentation in new hiring. Like, yeah, we've talked about as far as what the employment rates are for women versus men. So I want to say yes. There's obviously one big glaring piece as far as our fundamental rights, as far as our own body that is changed in the last couple of years. But on a lot of other measures, I would say, yes, we are better.
All right. I'm a big fan of one word descriptions. And I thought you used the word humility for George Washington, which is brilliant because I fanboy George Washington, been to Mount Vernon many times and read a lot of books about him. Give me a one word to describe where we're at, America 250, if you can, and say you can if you can, where we're at today, because mine is, would have to be something like nervous, where we're not sure what could come next, and for all the obvious reasons we talk about on the show and Point Taken all the time or on our podcast, what word would you choose?
Give me three. We're being tested. And so that proposition at the heart of the founding is being tested. But it's always been tested. And one of my beliefs about the shape of this country's history is we failed and we failed and we failed and we failed, right? Yes, we won the war for independence. And then guess what? The Articles of Confederation, it failed. We were a failed state. It wasn't going to work. So we wrote a constitution. And we failed in that constitution to live up to the founding ideals in the Declaration because we decided, you know, the founders decided that enslaved black Americans were only 3/5 of a person.
Yeah.
And then we failed to keep it together and we had a civil war. And then in Reconstruction, we failed to right all of the wrongs that led to the civil war. It took expanding the franchise and allowing women to vote. Hell, allowing non-landowning males to vote. Then we needed a Civil Rights Act and a Voting Rights Act in the 60s. So we have failed and failed and failed again and again. But through it all, we, I think, with and believe with every subsequent generation, came closer to living up to those founding ideals.
So you basically just described trusting the process.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also in trusting. Well, so we talked about this earlier this week, as far as when you put the timestamp of what are we better than 5 years ago? Are we better than 10 years ago? But like in the overarching arc of our history, I would say we do continue to get better. There are step forwards, there are step backs, and it also depends on what are we measuring.
Yep.
Because there's also a different idea of what do we want to be, who deserves these rights, et cetera, that there is that tussle and that debate over. But I think it is hard to debate that each generation things are moving forward, at least if we're talking about rights and access and acceptance and inclusion.
Just at a different pace sometimes. Because I'll use that example again. Distrust in 76... equal, if not more, in 2026. Bill, what's your word or phrase you would use to describe where we're at after 250?
Uncertain. I would say the biggest change in 250 years is the mindset. We had statesmen that created this country, and they had a purpose. They wanted something better than they left in Great Britain. And they worked together to find that answer. And it's not perfect, and it continues to be improved over the course of time. Today we have politicians. When you have people running for office in this cycle that either are going specifically to fight against Donald Trump or specifically to support Donald Trump, that's ridiculous. They should be talking about what they're going to do for you and me. That's what this country was founded on, is how are you going to help the collective improve? Not what are you going to do for this person or that person, but that's where we're at. We're now, we got those jerseys on right now, the red or the blue, that does not allow these people to see the bigger picture and what this was really all about and what their actual role is. They have an unbelievably important role from the day we were founded as a country, and they don't see it that way. Now it's a political warfare game that I got to be better than him. That's all I got to be, is better than him. And I don't have to think about the rest of the people.
The word that comes to mind for me when you say that is the professionalization of the political class actually undermines our politics.
100%.
Right? 100%. You know, George Washington wrote, the best title he ever had was American citizen. It wasn't president of the United States.
Right.
Right? All of these guys, and they were all guys back then.
They had the big view.
Yeah, they had the big view, and they all went and did their service, and then they went back to their farms, right, and their estates. And the idea of citizen legislators, and that the sovereignty of this nation is embedded in the people, not in the politicians, it is something we've gone away from as politics has become a profession rather than a type of servant leadership.
Yeah.
Kristen, what's your word or phrase? Where would you put us?
Honestly, what came up for me, gut instinct or gut reaction, was adolescence. Of like, I mean, in
we
comparison,
still are young.
In comparison to other countries, how young we are, and how much more in the history and arc of England and France and Germany and the boundaries and the wars that were like over 100-year war, right? As far as how they developed and changed in a much longer period of time than we have, and how young we actually are, and the growing pains that continue to come as we are figuring it out.
So are you optimistic that we're going to continue to grow up and become a young adult? you're good?
I think there's plenty of criticism to go around as far as where we are, but I also don't buy into like the hyperbole that we are about to fall apart.
I don't either. I agree with that.
I just think that like this is a shithole country. Sorry. I just don't think that. And I don't think this one president, if you don't like him, is the demise of this entire country. And vice versa for people who were very upset when Obama was president. Like, that wasn't the demise of the entire country. We have systems in place to withstand actors who are there for a short period of time and make their mark, but things can be adjusted. And so I just don't think, like, are we going to be a superpower, the superpower 50 years from now? I don't know. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to still be a great country.
As part of the preparation for the podcast, I was looking at a lot of different things. And I'm a big fan of defining moments, whether it's for an individual or an organization, when you celebrate something. I look at things like landing on the moon. I remember as a kid how awesome that was. Or older than me, individuals would remember the victory in World War II. I'm curious where you all fall. Let's start with Kristen. What would be that moment? Or somebody else jump
in. Within my lifetime?
It's obviously within your lifetime. What that moment would be, and what does it say about the country that we all live in and hopefully support? Anybody can jump in.
I'll speak for the youngsters first. I thought the youngest seminal world historical moment that I have any memory of was the fall of the Berlin Wall, symbolizing
the end of
the Cold War.
Well, it was a big one.
I was 7 years old.
I remember Reagan's speech.
Yeah, me too.
And so that was the idea of a democracy withstanding the threat from the Soviet Union and communism. And it was described at the time as the end of history. Now, that's not how history works, but it was the culmination of probably America at its most, you know, supreme around the world, because what the foundations that were laid when we won World War II and established the global rules-based order after that, the payoff came when the wall came down.
Falling of the Berlin Wall. What do you think,
Ben? I would have said that on the negative side, I'd say 9/11 was probably the most vivid memory I have.
The response, the way this country, I mean, we're talking 90% that approval could happen
on our homeland is stunning, but I'll give you a positive one. I think the 1980 U.S. hockey team winning the gold medal against Russia was so much bigger than a hockey game. It was capitalism versus communism. It was one superpower versus another. It had so many bigger connotations than people could have comprehended at the time.
I'll let Kristen take this because we talked about the connection between big sporting events and patriotism, and right now, full display World Cup.
I mean, I've made this point a lot so far on this show, on our show during this past week, is that I don't think there was anything more perfect than us being one of the three hosts for the World Cup ahead of our 250.
Right.
Like, I mean, and maybe that's because I'm a sports fan or whatever, well. But like how that ended up working out. And I think the amount of pride people are having in watching foreigners experience our country has been really fun. And if you were lucky enough to live in one of the cities that is hosting games right now and getting to watch people come to America and experience it for the first time. And I think now that the U.S. men's team is doing as well as they're doing, and we're all getting to root for one team in the lead up of, I mean, last night's game was incredible. Like getting to root and be all on the same team, rooting for one team ahead of
July 4th
is like, it's really special.
I was at the Brewers game last night, 30,000 plus people. When they showed on the Jumbotron that the U.S. had won 2-0, the place went berserk. It was really fun.
One more moment that to me stands out. The election of Barack Obama in 2008. I'm sorry if you're a Republican and you hated the guy. The idea that within 250 years,
it's a big deal.
Right. We went from a country that embedded chattel slavery into its constitution and then elected a black man president. Took too long for all of it, but like that is another seminal world historical moment in our lifetimes.
I didn't vote for him, but I completely agree with that assessment because this idea, and this is what it is now. I just had this conversation with somebody out and about yesterday, that you have to hate the president if it's the other party. You walk around every day living that life. It's the dumbest thing possible. Find something in his policies that maybe you can support or you can at least recommend that this president that you don't like or didn't vote for could do for our country to make the process move forward. That's my frustration.
I would say that another one that pops out for me, at least in my lifetime, is Obergefell and how quickly public sentiment on gay marriage and gay people or LGBTQ people changed it, like in the beginning of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama saying civil unions, right? As far as where it was at the end of or like mid aughts to within 10 years where we got. And there's certainly moments right now that it's not perfect and it's not wildly unanimously inclusion, but how far it came in such a like quick period of time, I think is also a demonstration of like how fast things can change for the better for groups of people in this country.
I was just thinking about Joe's comment about George Washington. I had the opportunity to interview some historians at Mount Vernon a couple years ago for my previous show, like three shows ago. And I asked this question, is there a current example of someone who leads or could be a George Washington? And almost to a person, they said, no. That's another frustrating thing that we don't have those kind of people. Now, he is a one of, obviously, the life he led. The other word that comes to mind with him is personal sacrifice, because he just lived a life that was just so rich, yet suffered immeasurably, personally and professionally, and all in the ways he did. And I, just as an aside, if we're going to talk about America 250, it's the places in this country. And if you have not been to Mount Vernon, this is an ad for Mount Vernon. Go check it out. It's absolutely spectacular.
I did it last year for the first time.
It is unbelievable. And you want to, it takes you back because they haven't changed much.
Nope.
And it still looks the way it did. All right. I want to just sort of shift a little bit because I think one of the things that sometimes podcasts and talk shows can get too focused on is a negative. What do you each think is the best thing about America? Like it could be personal, it could be professional, it could be patriotic, could be whatever. That is a shining example of what we do right. I'll give you mine and you can just kind of think about it for a second. And I talked about it on our show today, as a matter of fact. It's the fact that We are a country of immigrants.
Oh, you took mine.
Because it's so obvious to me that we are fighting this battle that we should have stopped fighting a long time ago. And I'll make it personal because my relatives, Sicilian relatives, they were a target of this at one point. Places like New Orleans, of all places, a lot of them went there and they went to other big cities across the country, East Coast. And they were persecuted as, you know, not citizen material. And there's about 100 other examples of different groups of people, Jamaicans, and you pick a country, basically, who've been persecuted like that. We have shown, and Krista made a great example on the show today as well, about the World Cup team and how mixed that group is. Birthright citizenship is a part of that story as well. That's what I'm most proud of, because of all of these storylines, all these people who came from all over the world with nothing. What they did, the families they created, the stories they've now told and shared is the reason why this formula works. And I don't want to see anything mess it up. And I know I get that's a speech, but that's the one thing that shapes me.
So my favorite thing about this country is that it is still easier here and more likely here that anyone who is born with nothing can become something.
Yeah.
Upward mobility is part of the American identity to me. For sure, stipulated, it is not easy enough for enough people, and we are living in an era of income inequality and those at the top, you know, having the easiest path to getting even more, but this is still the best place to be born with nothing if you want to work hard and live your own American dream. I have always and will always love that about this country.
I would have thought you'd say sports, something sports related, because you love sports.
I do.
Yeah.
But This is bigger than sports, Steve.
True. Phil McCosh.
Says Captain America.
Yes.
It's hard to top Joe's. I agree with that 100%. The seventh of eight kids, the fact that the opportunities I've had, the ability to take my family on a vacation to Italy last week, which would have been unheard of for my mom and dad, is pretty remarkable. And if you work hard and you're willing to put in your time, good things can happen in America, and it doesn't matter where you started. I mean, I was a kid that got free and reduced lunch, and now I'm on the opposite side of that spectrum and grateful for that, but it's that's hard to top that. If you wanted me to add one thing, I would say innovation is really critical to what we've experienced over the last 250 years because the major innovations that have changed the world, frankly, have been here in the U.S., whether it's electricity or automobiles or computers, that all started here. And that's something to be really, really proud of. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. In fact, I think it's going to accelerate. And I think we will figure out this AI thing. And one of the next segments, when we talk about the future, I mean, that's something to consider. But I think we will figure out how to use that for humanity's purposes and make not only ourselves better, but the world better.
Are the tech bros the future Thomas Edisons and Henry Fords, you think?
I think there are a lot of them out there. And they're probably not at a big company right now. They might be working out of their garage. And they've got an idea. And to Joe's point, in a little different fashion, you know, they've got an opportunity to make that something really special.
All right, I stole yours.
Well, I'll actually bring it full circle. Is because a lot of the innovation you're talking about, a lot of the people who have made those innovative developments were either immigrants or first generation children of immigrants, sure. Right? As far as that work ethic of like my parents sacrificed for us to get here that opened up the door for me to create some of the things that have created a mass amount of wealth for the country, for the industry. And like that to me is why there is no America story without an immigrant story and a slavery story, right? Like this entire country was built off the backs of cheap or free labor and people who came here and either by force or by choice were the bottom of the totem pole and were not considered citizens, whether we talk about the Irish or we talk about the Italians or we talk about the Chinese and like all of our railroad system, right? Like so much was built off of people just willing to be here and do impossible jobs that like we are not us without embracing immigration.
But there were people like Henry Ford who had a vision that understood that the way America is best is if this middle class is strong.
Yeah.
And he wanted his employees to build cars that they could buy, mm-hmm. right? You don't see as much of that today. We need more Henry Fords.
Look at Kohler. Hitler. Look at the American Club. Yep. He built an entire place for his workers to live and assimilate into American culture as they worked for him and created a good,
a bigger vision
and like a lifestyle for them to live and prosper here while also benefiting, obviously, his company.
Yeah.
Good ad placement opportunity for Kohler. As a proud owner of two Kohler toilets and faucets, probably three of those. Love the company. All right, let's launch to the future. Obviously, we've been looking at sort of 50-year increments in sort of our homework for this podcast, the sort of reflections on America 250. It's a big question because none of us, I'm not even going to be here in 50 years probably. Bill, as much as you're a little bit younger than me, I don't know if you are. Hopefully you two are, you youngsters, Joe and Kristen.
Start working out more if I'm going to
I read something the other day that
odds are in your favor.
Yeah.
Well into our hundreds, Kristen and I will still be able to play pickleball is the speculation.
In whatever weird way, I hope I live to see that. All right. So Joe, the next 50 years, I don't want to ignore the current political climate, but it's fraught with peril. There's concerns, obviously, but where are we going? You can break it down in 10-year increments to the next 50, or just go all 50 if you want. But where are we going?
Boy, I wish I knew. I wish I had. Yeah. Where I hope we go is that we emerge from a pretty turbulent start to the 21st century, right? If you just look at, say, like from 9/11 2001. To July 4th, 2026, pretty turbulent 25-year period in American history.
Oh, yeah.
And after turbulence, hopefully comes another period of great prosperity for more people, right? We talked about the middle class, the explosion of that in the post-World War II era. That is when America was at its mightiest, you know, vis-a-vis the rest of the world. So if we can figure out how to deal with these challenges of income inequality, give more people more pathways to prosperity if they're willing to work for it and you know find their own path to the American dream. And if we can navigate the most challenging information environment in human history, right, which now has AI layered over the top of it so that we can find our way to prospering with those advances in artificial intelligence. If we can do that and we can hang together and understand that the fights and the divisions, like, that's normal, threatening the very foundations of the ideas behind the founding of this country, that's where the danger and the risks come in today. If we can do that and we can get to an America where there's a little less of I'm more American than you are or I get to decide how American you are, if we could do all those things, the next 50 years are going to be really exciting for this country.
Bill. My biggest fear is our three institutions, right? I think our founders did a really good job of creating three co-equal branches of government. And the discussion today about weakening any of those, whether it's the Supreme Court or the Congress, are frightening to me because I think that ultimately is the demise of this experiment. When one party, you're creating a king potentially. And I think that's high risk and it was not what the founders intended. So I do want to look forward. I'm hopeful. I'm always an optimistic guy. But my hope sincerely is that the three co-equal branches of government remain solid and stable.
Let me ask you, this is a real specific question, but you're the conservative Republican in the room and you have aligned yourself with this president, President Donald Trump. Do you think he shares your opinion on the limitations on power? Because that's the biggest criticism right now of him.
He's testing it. And the response to that from the left is to test it in the other direction, which is we need 13 Supreme Court justices.
And change the rules.
I think all those conversations are really frightening and high risk for the population going forward.
But you're optimistic for the future?
I am. I think AI is going to ultimately be harnessed by good people who want to do the right thing, and it will ultimately benefit us. Maybe it'll solve cancer and some things that have eluded us in our lifetime. But I'm hopeful that my granddaughter is going to have a far better life than I did. And I had a pretty good one.
More humility, less hubris in the next 50 years.
That would probably be good.
Yeah.
But how do we get there? Like, 'cause I feel like mine is like, it comes back to having conversations. I think how I have grown over the last, I don't know, X amount of years is like in the ability of what we do every Friday, what you and I do every day, and the seeking to understand versus seeking to be right all the time. And like, that is not a common trait these days. And like, humility is not a common trait these days. And so it's like, where do you start as far as trying to embed that in a next generation? Is it schools? Is it parents? Like, how do we harness that or like bring that back?
I'm going to go with the power of an individual, because it started with the conversation about George Washington, an incredible individual who launched us. I don't know who it is yet, but I think someone in this country, it's obviously probably going to be from a political perspective, is going to shape our future. And whether it's a Republican or Democrat, I have no idea. And I, you know, I do a show on politics, and I tell people all the time in public speaking, I hate politics and it's stupid. But I do recognize the power of an individual to shape a country. And we've seen examples of this throughout history. And, you know, being an Italian, I, you know,
a believer
in the famous Italian leaders.
Steve is outing himself as a believer in the great man or woman.
It could be a woman.
Of history.
Hey, there's a lot of smart women out there. I said day one on the radio, women are smarter than men. I believe that an individual can shape the country. And I'll go back to that sports thing I talked about before we have a fun little way to end this podcast. Sports has a role to play.
No doubt.
People unify behind things, and they can shape the country they live in by the success. I know it's win or lose, and you know the loser goes home, but all that stuff. It has power beyond just the game.
I think especially in the context of the World Cup, and you see all these people cheering for their, like people who are currently living in the U.S. cheering for their home country. And like, there is something about that I think is really powerful, is that the difference between what your country is and who your politicians are. And I think you see that a lot as far as like, you see Contreras this week, obviously, or after the Venezuela.
Contreras.
Yes. Yeah. And like, they're here, they're living here, and how much they feel their countrymen back in Venezuela and what that country is going through right now in the aftermath of the earthquake, of like, you are who you are and your roots are where they're from. And like, you see that in fans cheering for their country's team so wholeheartedly, even though they probably have a lot of criticism over their own that government at any given point, in the same way we do as Americans, right? As far as we can love our teams, we can love our country, and we can be very wildly disappointed in the people who are in charge right now. And I think that is our best example of being able to separate the two.
All right, we got like 30 seconds. Best thing about the 4th of July, Joe?
Fireworks.
Bill?
Family.
Parades.
Community.
All right, this has been the Reflections on America 250. This is the gang I love hanging out with every Friday on Point Taken. Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi, Bill McCutcheon, Joseph Pecky. However you celebrate it, have a wonderful 4th. Thanks for listening to the podcast right from the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin Podcast Studio. We'll see you on the radio.